On our morning show get together today, we welcome back our good friend Ben Moffitt. We're talking about the Cross Currents Heritage Center and some upcoming events that are going on there as well. Good to see you again, Ben.
Thank you for having me.
Did you have a good winter?
Yes, I did, though we had some pretty serious storms in Hawaii. A lot of flooding. 36-hour power outage.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that would almost give you a little bit of an indication of what it was like living on Tipisaki Farm all those years ago with no power, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you come back to this area, and you have a caretaker over the winter, but I presume you had to do a few things when you got back here.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Get it always, in ship shape and everything.
Always projects going on.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about some really exciting events coming up. I think, first of all, you've had a few events at Cross Currents Heritage.
Yeah, well, this is our third year, but we started out the spring with Dr. Eric Carson of University of Wisconsin Extension talking about the recent geologic history of the Wisconsin and Mississippi River valleys. So recent in geologic terms is 30,000 years. And that was very well attended. I think the Q&A went on for 45 minutes or so. It was really wonderful.
That's good. That's what you want.
Oh, exactly. We want this dialogue, not just somebody talking at people, but a real conversation. I should say, for people who don't know, Cross Currents Heritage Center is a new gathering place started by my brother, Bruce Moffitt, and myself. And it's on the site of the first settlement in Richland County by Euro-American settlers. Our great-great-grandfather John Coombe settled there in 1838. And the farm has been in the family for five generations. And our mother got it put on the National Register of Historic Places, the entire farm. And so it was known by the family as Tipisaki. And we have created Cross Currents Heritage Center. And it's just across the Blue River Bridge, the first farm west of the port on Highway 60.
I was thinking about your great-great-grandfather, John Coombe, when I was driving through that area not too long ago. And, you know, you talk about the Wisconsin River, and I've heard over the years that, oh, it's a fairly young river. I've heard it referred to that, and how dangerous it can be.
Yeah.
What it must have been like.
When it was wild.
When it was wild, yes.
Right. Yeah, I was just watching some tape of my great-aunt Lottie, who grew up primarily in Blue River and a little bit in Richland Center. And she referred to the little tiger. And so I checked with Mark Cupp, and he said, oh, the little tiger was the southern branch of the Wisconsin on the other side of the island on the way to Blue River. That island is called Coombe Island. And it's a very tame little stream now, but I guess at that time it must have been very unpredictable. When the river was wild.
I'm guessing there were some drownings.
Some
early settlers.
Yeah.
And things like that.
Yeah.
So hard to believe, that he settled there and, this land has stayed in the family all these years.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Not only the land, the stuff.
Right.
We have like penciled receipts from the 1800s, 5 cents bought a pound of grain, just crazy things. They just really documented everything, but also, there'd be a broken tool and they'd keep it. Why not throw it away? No, they'd keep it.
See, today they'd probably call that hoarding.
Right? Yeah, right? Exactly. Exactly.
But I love that. I admire that because we are such a throwaway generation.
True. True. Yeah. That's interesting also because we have Casey Brown, a Ho-Chunk man, coming this coming weekend, and he talks about that, about how so many aspects of modern American culture is, what's new? Okay, that's in the past. Okay, forget that. What's new? Whereas the Ho-Chunk and a lot of traditional cultures, and a lot of white people too. It's like, no, that was important. Let's talk about that. It'll come around again, this Memorial Day or Labor Day or Independence Day. And it's in the repetition and the layering in, almost lacquering in of meaning. You know, you experience something as a child, you experience something as a teenager, as an adult, and then eventually as a senior citizen. And it's important to remember as well as to look to the new.
We talked before we went on the air about your grandfather and all of the things that he saw in his lifetime.
This is Jack Kirkpatrick of Kirkpatrick Cheese. And he one time said to me, Ben, life is change, change, change. And of course, when he grew up, he was born in 1896. You know, he saw the automobile come in. I suppose they probably had gas lights and then to electric lights. And yeah.
Maybe the first phones came into the area then.
I'm sure.
And we think now about how you know, how times have changed and how mm-hmm. it would be nice to go back to the old days. I'm sure that was, you know, they probably thought maybe that was a ruination of the generation, the telephone or whatever it might have been, right?
Right, radio even. Right?
Radio, sure, yeah. TV.
Yeah.
So it warms my heart that you're able to do school tours, and we had some mm-hmm. guests from Riverdale on the program with us last week. Really cool that some of the Riverdale students had a chance to see what it was all about.
Yes, we've been wanting to launch a school program, and all of a sudden came together. We had, in the last couple weeks, 6 teachers and administrators from Riverdale, but also Dan Pulvermacher, a history teacher from Richland Center. He's on one of our boards, and he came out and toured the place, so he'll be bringing his students. But Kurt Thompson, the history teacher at Riverdale, said, could I bring a group? And I thought, well, I'm kind of working on a tour. And then he said, these are seniors. And I thought, well, you know, our senior citizens. No. I thought, well, they're going to miss out next year. So we improvised and brought them. And it was very wonderful. You could just see their eyes kind of bug open, especially going into our parlor, which is the most museum-like of the rooms. It really looks like you're going into a parlor from 1868. We have the original wool carpet. Our mother had the wallpaper reprinted after the original pattern. Most of the original furniture. And in the afternoon when the sunlight is coming through those lace curtains, it's like a magical, almost like a fairy kingdom. You know, you just want to have tea and cookies.
What was the response of these high school seniors, or maybe some of the questions that came up, Ben?
They didn't have many questions. I think they were trying to stay cool and composed, but you'd surprise them periodic times, you know, like when I brought out the chamber pot, and they're like, oh, yeah, would I want to go outdoors in the middle of winter to use an outhouse with the wind blowing sub-zero, you know? Sometimes I've shown kids, we have this water pump in the kitchen, and say, where do you think that water came from? Oh, the well. No, and you pry up the floorboards, and there's a cistern under there. And of course, one of the kids' jobs probably was to bring buckets from the well and fill that cistern. And they would also probably channel water, rainwater from the roof in there. And then you see these little irons. We have so many irons for ironing clothes, and of course, none of them have a cord. And just think of how much work the women had to do ironing linen clothing, because they couldn't get cotton during the Civil War. A lot of Wisconsin farmers were growing flax that they would weave, and that makes linen. And linen clothing, of course, linen sheets, they wrinkle. Or the gardening and preserving of food that the women had to do, weaving, sewing, mending, never ending.
There was just something this morning on one of our farm programs about farming before there was power, and you think about everything that had to be done by hand, but certainly cooking, the cook stoves and all of that, amazing amount of wood or whatever source you used.
And how many people were in the area? Because you needed all those farm laborers. Any farm of any size needed a lot of farm hands, so... Port Andrew, it's just a really tiny little place now, but in its heyday, it had three stores, a hotel, a boot and shoe shop, a jeweler, a school, a cabinet maker. And then at that time, if you were in Port Andrew, after 1859 or so, you could take a ferry across the river, go to Blue River, get on a train, go east or west to Milwaukee, to the Twin Cities. You could also get on a paddle wheeler right there in Port Andrew, go to Prairie du Chien, get on another, go to St. Louis, go all the way down to New Orleans. I heard somebody say, I don't know if this is actually true, that people in Port Andrew thought it was going to be the next St. Louis. Mm-hmm. Just boom times.
Right. I mean, now you think about, well, we'll just go across the bridge to Blue River, but it wasn't as easy then, was
no,
it?
No. Yeah.
I can see where, it was a nice little settlement there, and people probably got, some of the things that they needed, some of the main grocery items and things like that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Amazing. Well, the program coming up this weekend, you'd like to talk about. Some people have taken an interest outside the area of Heritage Center and Tibisaki Farms. Maybe you could talk about that a little bit, Ben.
This event?
Yes.
Yeah. So this Saturday, May 30th at 2 p.m., we have a program called Artists in the Farmhouse. So it's in the old Coombe Farmhouse in our family room. And we have two filmmakers, Casey Brown and Julia Pello. And they'll be showing footage from films they're working on, including one titled Indian Mounds in a Year. And a lot of this footage was shot right around Muscadet with Frank's Hill and that Ghost Eagle Mound that they've identified. Now, the Ghost Eagle Mound is the largest bird mound in the world. And apparently, its wings, if you measured the wingspan, it could fit inside the Capitol at Madison. It's that big. And they, using laser technology, LIDAR, they identified it and marked it. Because it had been plowed, it's hard to see it, but with this laser technology, they can detect it. And so Casey and Julia have drone shots over Frank's Hill and over that Eagle Mound, and I'm sure some of that will be shown this Saturday. Casey Brown himself, he presented last year a show called Shuffling Many Worlds, because he's a Ho-Chunk man, but he's also very much present in the modern world. He lives in Chicago. He's got a foot in many worlds. And he calls himself a native futurist, which means he honors the Ho-Chunk tradition, but he is right there accommodating, adapting to modern life. And he says that the Ho-Chunk traditionally have always adapted to whatever came. The horse came, they learned how to ride, they became some of the best riders. The gun came, they learned how to shoot, became very good with the weapon. So he is a very engaging speaker. And in fact, when I told Steve Williamson that Casey was coming, he said, be prepared to laugh. Casey won an Emmy for a film he made about Truman Lowe, the Ho-Chunk artist. But he also studied improv comedy at Second City in Chicago. And he is really funny. Really engaging, very articulate, funny, and a straight shooter. So one other thing he says is he's very clear that the mounds, the history of the mounds, are important to everybody. White, Native, anybody, that it's our shared history and that our histories are intertwined and we should celebrate that, not feel like we're antagonists. And I find it very refreshing these days that we're able to hear the Ho-Chunk perspective. I don't know, when you were a kid, did you ever hear Ho-Chunk speakers?
No.
Yeah.
Not at all. So it's
I think they were much shyer about sharing their culture, and now they're opening up, and they have a lot to share. A very different perspective on, especially on time, as I said, this sense of cyclical time as opposed to linear time.
The effigy mounds are, I mean, they're very, very interesting. A lot of people have studied them. I think the drone footage, that's got to be really outstanding to see.
Yeah, that'll be very interesting. Yeah, so the mounds point the way to resources. They tell stories. They talk about the planets. They line up with stars and the sun. I think those at Frank's Hill, some of their purpose was to tell people when to plant, when to harvest, because on the opposite hill, there are these calendar mounds, like, I don't know, 8 or 10 in a row. And when the sun rises behind one or sets behind, I guess it was set, when it sets behind one, that tells you where you are in the season. And it's just amazing how they've lasted 1,000 years. And they're still there.
It's amazing that, you know, technology is probably not the right word, but the foresight that they had to develop that.
Because you and I could go dig up and put a big mound together. Would it last a couple rainfalls? I don't know.
No. And would you be able to tell what month it was?
Yeah. And adjust and line them up. And
So you say there are excerpts that they're going to be showing of these films.
Yes, these are works in progress. So it'll be a chance to ask questions and find out about their process. I mean, that's another thing. How often do you get to talk to a filmmaker and say, how did you start this? How did you get this idea? You know, what are your visions for this project?
Have you seen any of the footage yet, Ben?
Just still images. I haven't seen anything in motion yet.
So it'll be new to you.
Yeah, definitely.
And you mentioned Julia Pello as well.
Yes, that's his filmmaking partner, and she'll be there. And she is a professor of film at Northwestern and has been invited to present her films in France. And so she's quite reputable herself.
And that is coming up this Saturday
at 2 p.m. And people can pre-register at our website, crosscurrentsheritage.org, and just scroll down to Spring 2026 events, click on that, and then there'll be a button on that page to sign up for this event.
So was there a limited amount of seating there?
Yes, it's a small little farmhouse. So we have about 10, 12 seats left at this point.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. Good opportunity. History is fascinating, and I think it's important. You mentioned the students from Riverdale, but I think it's important to try to pass that on to the next generation.
I think also, especially for the students, this pride in where they live, that many of them probably take it for granted that they live in a very special, very beautiful place with deep history.
Yeah, the Riverdale School District in general has a lot of history.
Yes.
With that. Yeah. What's the proximity of Frank's Hill and the mounds to your...
About 6 miles.
6 miles, okay.
Yeah. And there are other mounds. There's a Wanick Mound pretty much right across Highway 60 from us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think this area has the highest concentration of mounds in the world. Yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah. Plus, there's the geologic history
that
is so fascinating with the Driftless.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Yeah.
We'll come back and talk more with Ben Moffitt in just a bit on The Morning Show. Coming up, the special events at Cross Currents Heritage Center, and we'll have more in just a moment. Ben Moffitt, our guest on The Morning Show today, talking about Cross Currents Heritage Center and Tippasaki Farm and his heritage and so many things going on. So, we talk about the old, but also technology. You've got a YouTube thing going, don't you?
Yes, we have a YouTube channel, Cross Currents Heritage Center, if you just searched on YouTube. And so we do highlight reels. You can see a highlight reel, 6-minute highlight reel of Casey's presentation last year.
Oh.
Also, some Ho-Chunk dancing. We're going to have some of Eric Carson coming up. Also, hoping to have a short series, we call it Cross Currents Conversations, We have two up already with Roger Bailey, who's our master carpenter from Muscadet. And what we do is we pull old tools out and have him talk about them because he's a history buff. And he tells us how they were made, how old they are. And we always try to stump him, pull some tool that he won't know. And a couple times I think we've stumped him, but but he is a wealth of knowledge, but also very, very engaging and very fun. At least I find his videos very entertaining. There are two of them. Coming up probably in the August or so, we're going to put one up of my great aunt Lottie Coombe, who was born in Eagle Corners, raised in Blue River, and then lived in Richland Center. And she was born in 1902. And this is from a family reunion, this video, well, at that time it was home movie, shot in 1983, of her talking and telling stories. And she was a great storyteller. And so stories of life growing up in Blue River. So we're going to make some videos of that too and put them up on our website and on YouTube.
They have lots of old photos.
We do. We do. And we use those in our programs, in our tours. We are always showing slides of people. In the future, I think we'll actually show some videos too as part of the tours.
These old tools that you talk about that were identified by Roger, they were stored in some of the buildings then?
Yes. The family just didn't throw anything out. It's just crazy. At one point, Roger says, well, this tool broke, and they kept it. And then I reply, they kept everything. Because my brother and I are now in charge of going through this treasure trove of stuff and trying to make sense of it, and what do we keep, what do we donate, what do we throw away. Yeah, it's amazing.
When you look at an old building, Ben, and you think about the equipment that they had, the tools that they had, and how the boards are all, you know, the same length, and, you know, the beams and all that stuff had to be done by hand. It's amazing, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah. We have a picture of the old 1930s. It was taken in the 1930s of John Coombe's third cabin. And you can see that every piece is handmade. The beams, you can see where the axe was hitting and the fro came down. And but the house we live in now, the house up on the hill, that was made with logs that were milled at his mill at Bird's Creek. So you can see on those some of the saw lines, but still done without electricity. But they were using machines at that point.
What is the age of that house then?
1863. Mm-hmm. And then the oldest building on the property is the horse and threshing barn from 1860, 1861.
That is amazing, because I would guess some of the oldest buildings still standing in our county.
Yeah, I think there's some from the 1850s, because John would have been in his cabin at that point. So there are a few older buildings around, but yeah, it's up there.
Amazing. So check that out. Look for that in the YouTube channel coming up. Also, storytelling. You talked about your aunt. Is storytelling kind of a lost art?
I don't think so. I don't think it can ever die. It's in our genes. It's a survival mechanism. I think the type of storytelling you and I think of, just around the kitchen table or around the living room, that is in decline. But I think a lot of people get their storytelling itch scratched by movies and TV. And of course, lawyers are storytellers. Sportscasters are storytellers. You're a storyteller, of course. So there are a lot of ways to tell stories now. But we are going to have an event in the fall of the old classic, just one person telling a story. And this is going to be in September. Middle of October. It's going to be storytelling with music, focusing on farm life in the 1940s and 1950s. And we have a professional storyteller who's going to be the headline act. He'll start it and end it. His name is Jim May. He's an Emmy-winning storyteller, professional storyteller for years and years. And he grew up on a small farm in northern Illinois near Woodstock. And he was his father's little helper, going all around with him, and has wonderful storytelling technique, that real old country style. And then in the middle, a local teller, Cecilia Farron from Lone Rock, will tell a very poignant story about her father. She grew up on a century farm, I think a bit north of Lone Rock. And so that'll be part of our fall offerings. We have a more extensive offering of events this fall. We'll have fall foraging. This will be in mid-September, where people can go out into our woodlot with an expert whose name is Abby Lehman, and see what plants can be harvested at this time of year to eat. And she's very clear on what to look for. And she normally does this at Taliesin. And of course, it would be much more expensive if you go to one of those Taliesin foraging. We're much more affordable. But she runs the kitchen garden at Taliesin and then loves to forage. Another event in the fall, we're going to have Casey Brown back again for a round table of indigenous artists showing their work. Again, another chance to experience the Ho-Chunk perspective, and I'm sure Casey will make it entertaining. I'm also going to be leading guided tours in the fall of the Old House and Grounds. And this will be a very intimate tour. I'm only going to have 6 to 8 people each time, because some of the rooms are small, and I want it to be very personal. It's also going to be very experiential. By that I mean you're going to get to hear, see, smell, touch, feel, and hopefully even taste history. We'll have artifacts that you can pass around. There'll be sounds, there'll be smells. We really hope to transport you back to the 1860s with this tour, or beyond. It's also multimedia in that I'll be showing slides and perhaps some video, but mostly slides of people who lived in the house and charting their life stories as they go along. So that'll be a type of storytelling, too.
Great to hear that you've kind of expanded things. And this is a large part of our tourism in the area as well. You have a lot of people coming to the area that want to learn more about this area and the Driftless and everything.
One time I was at the port and saw these Japanese tourists there. And they were in their leathers and their motorcycle gear. They had some sort of program where they rode a Harley through the Driftless. And I said to them, how did you hear about this? We don't speak English. We don't speak English.
Really?
But I saw Japanese tourists here, yeah. We get them all the time in Hawaii. It was a shock to see them at the port.
And in terms of goals for the future, Ben, do you have some ideas, some things you'd like to open it up even more for in the coming years?
Oh, yeah, especially school field trips. Ah. We want that to be a big part of what we do. So we're reaching out. One of the people who came, I mentioned teachers and administrators come in the last couple of weeks, and these are collaborative discussions. We ask them, what do they need? What do we need to do as far as infrastructure to support you? What do you need in terms of curriculum? Real nice dialogue. And so what Ken Theed suggested, he's on our education committee, is that we have fall teacher visits where they get oriented to the place. And in the spring, when the kids are getting a little restless, you have the field trips. And so we met with Sarah Pluckelman of Riverdale Elementary, and we're hoping to have the teachers out this August and then start doing the fourth graders. And it could be history, but it also could be natural science, because we have this great woodlot that we're trying to restore to with some areas as Oak Savannah. And so people can see that in progress. There's a spring, so there could be water testing. There are all sorts of things to do with native plants or invasive plants. So lots to learn there.
How many acres currently is the farm?
200.
200 acres.
Yeah. But at one time, John Coombe had 730 acres. but it wasn't all continuous. How he farmed that, I don't know.
That is amazing. You know, mm-hmm. you think about farming with horses, I presume.
Horses and oxen.
And yeah. oxen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot of plowing.
Yeah. But he would need a lot of farmhands. Yeah.
Definitely. And then in terms of now, as you look at what you've got going and down the road, some other things, some other tours, some other sure. opportunities, Ben?
We've got other visits coming, one by the Natural Resources Foundation. They're doing a field trip to view our progress in the woodlot. Like I said, we're trying to open up certain areas so that the oaks can regenerate. And we had a burn last spring. We were hoping to have a burn this fall. And so these are, I think this is a field trip for landowners sponsored by the Natural Resources Foundation to learn what happens to your property if you do try to restore it in this way. Also next week, we'll be hosting a group sponsored by the Ho-Chunk Nation who are, get this, paddling from Portage to Prairie du Chien in dugout canoes that they've made. There were some old cottonwood trees that I guess the DNR took down, and the Ho-Chunk were given them and made dugouts. And in fact, my wife Janine and I plan to join the paddlers on their journey from from Muscadet to Port Andrew, and then that group is going to come up and tour Cross Currents very briefly. And we're very excited about that.
Do you know the ages of these?
I don't know. The man who's leading it is Bill Quackenbush, who's well known, I think, with the Ho-Chunk Nation. Cultural Preservation, I think, is his office. So in the past, he's taken Ho-Chunk youth through the Four Lakes, and then I think he did one up farther north, maybe Lake Superior. So I'm hoping it's Ho-Chunk youth, but I don't know for sure who's going to be on board this time.
It's great how life kind of comes full circle because, yeah. you know, you have the Ho-Chunk. You know, one time probably didn't get along as much with the settlers,
yeah.
right?
Oh, yeah. I think it was a checkered history. I think in our family stories, there are some very positive encounters, but then also our grandmother told us that John Coombe and some settlers were involved in pushing them on the Ho-Chunk from a camp at Knapp's Creek. And thankfully, according to our grandmother's story, there was no loss of life. But it's not something we're proud of, but it's part of the history. And we feel you got to show the good, the bad, the warts, everything. And it was a clash of cultures that just couldn't understand each other at that time. And thankfully, we have more understanding now.
We had a member of the Ho-Chunk with us last week on the show, and he estimates around 90 million Native Americans were killed in this country, you know, through the years.
Yeah. Who was that?
You're going to put me on the spot here.
Okay. You can tell me later.
He's a medicine man, uh-huh. yeah, from uh-huh. the Viroqua area.
Oh,
so,
I'd like
yeah.
to. I'll have to look that
we'll
up.
We'll hook you up. Yeah, yeah, he was here just a week ago, in fact, uh-huh. talking about that. Uh-huh. But nice that the fences can be mended a little bit because
yes.
you've had them out. You had the dancers out
yes.
Last
yes.
fall.
Yes, and they were wonderful. This is the Wisconsin Dells Singers and Dance Troupe, Mary and Elliot Funmaker. Really wonderful. And they were very engaging with the audience. Again, a certain amount of humor, explaining their regalia, explaining the dances, explaining what it means to them. And then at the end, they got the audience up in kind of like a square dance and had them dancing with the people in full regalia. It was a very popular event. We'll have them back at some point in a year or two, I think.
The filmmaker that you talked about, Casey mm-hmm. Brown, you know, maybe you could talk a little bit about how he initially got connected with this area.
Sure. He is the son of Richie Brown, who was a longtime officer with the Ho-Chunk Nation. And this was before the casinos. Richie got a call from Frank Shadowald in Muscadet, who had these mounds on his property, and he didn't know quite what they were about. And at that time, Richie didn't have a crew, so he would wake his young son, Casey, up You know, Casey wanted to sleep in, wanted to play video games, hang with his friends. And no, Casey, I need you to come hold a post. I'm surveying these mounds. So he'd wake him up and say, you can sleep in the truck, you know. And so Casey was his father's helper and go to these mound sites. And he, so it got into his blood. And so getting back to Frank Shadowald, he met with Richie, and Richie helped Frank preserve the mounds and interpret them. And so Casey, from a young age, was involved with this. And then Casey, for a while, was the PR director at the Ho-Chunk Nation, and he left after a change of administration and was unemployed. And his father said, oh, Casey, remember that ghost eagle mound that I was talking about? We've finally been given permission to go on the land and look at it. And so Casey went with him, and they marked it with lime, I think. So there are these great drone shots of this eagle marked in white on the fallow field. Just very stunning to see this huge, beautiful artwork. But it's also telling a story or indicating some natural resource for the people who are wandering.
Now, these are to see with the lime outline, I presume, then.
Yes, yes. It's not able to, you can't see it now because it's now in agricultural production, but they have these videos of it and still pictures of it. So those will be on display this Saturday, May 30th at 2.
You'd like people to, again, check it out, pre-register if
yes,
they
can? Yes, pre-register at our website, crosscurrentsheritage.org.
Great. Good to hear from you. This is a great thing for our area to learn a little bit more about it. And I think sometimes, again, we drive by a place like this all the time and never stop. We have so many really cool resources here in our immediate area.
Right. And we are just in the beginning of opening our place up. We hope to keep expanding, keep opening it up and sharing it with the public as just a gathering place where people, you know, across the political spectrum can come together, talk, learn from each other, and just enjoy this beautiful spot overlooking the river.
Are you continuing to do some work on the buildings and upkeep?
Constant.
That's constant.
Yeah, yeah, every year. This year, Roger is hoping to do the roof on the old barn. He's saved 4 of the 5 old buildings. He thought the old barn, if it had gotten a heavy snow, a wet snow a couple of years back, might have come down, but he's got it shored up. The ridge line is much straighter than it used to be. It used to be quite a wavy ridge line, and it's great to see that building shored up.
Yeah, that's not easy, and you're trying to do it kind of in the style of the old buildings too, right?
Yes, as much as possible, and doing it with a limited budget. Yeah, just doing as much as we can each year.
Do you foresee maybe getting some chances to have like regular hours for visitors to come?
We would like to. Right now it's by event. That would be ideal, and have Ken Thied has talked about, and we're going to work on putting signs up at each building with a QR code so people could do a self tour, you know, go up, look at the building, use the QR code and go to a web page that describes how it was built, what the history is. Yeah.
If someone is interested in what we've talked about today, how can they get a hold of you, Ben?
They can email me at crosscurrentsheritage@gmail.com. And all this information is on our website, crosscurrentsheritage.org.
Good. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Yeah, and good luck with your event coming up this weekend at 2 o'clock. And again, you can find more at their website, their socials, Cross Currents Heritage Center and Tippasaukee Farm. Ben Moffitt, always a good to see you.
Thank you, Phil.
We'll see you soon. Probably in the fall when you talk about some of those events coming up as well.